everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. And again, Tom, overnight rain. We had a nice one up at our place. And boy, that's two mornings in a row. I woke up to a lovely...
gentle rain.
Gentle rain.
We had over my part of town. Yeah. We had the same thing.
So,
but I guess Santa Cruz and Cochise counties were getting hit pretty hard earlier in the evening, and by the time that storm got in our neck of the woods,
yeah,
kind of had run out of steam.
Well, in the Buckmaster, we had our test tube rain gauge
about, with the CC markings.
Yeah, about a quarter of an inch, but I will take it. Hello, everybody. It is the 4th of August, 2022. The Buckmaster Show and the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studio, our radio station, 1030, KVOI, Tucson source for trusted news talk. Worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. Our telephone interviews on the Buckmaster Show Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We welcome in studio Steve Christie, Republican representing the 4th Pima County Supervisorial District. Supervisor, how are you?
I'm great, Bill. Great to be here.
Getting some good rain up in your district up in Mount Lemmon.
Yes, and that's a relief because of obviously the fire danger is always something very near and dear to everybody and the concern over it. So when we get the kind of rain that we've been getting up in the Catalinas and in general, in the Summerhaven area in particular, it brings a sigh of relief to all up there, and it also preserves a great getaway for the community to enjoy a cooler climb, free from any kind of worry or issues of fire danger.
And the hotels are opening?
They're getting close. They've got a lodge coming up. I think that goes open up in August. They have the casitas there. There's a couple of businesses opening. It's a thriving and going concern up there, and it's just like a breath of fresh economic air that we're experiencing in the Summerhaven community. And I encourage everybody, if they want to, though the heat hasn't been too bad lately, thanks to the monsoons, but if it does get a little bit hot under the collar, go on up to Summerhaven.
Yeah. What about these vote centers? How did all that come off on Election Day?
Well, our office has been compiling and gathering a lot of information that my constituents, as well as many people throughout the county, have been sharing of issues and problems and concerns over the voting process. So what we're doing is we're asking people, and your listeners included, if there are issues that they experienced while voting that did not seem normal or that certainly created problems, to please contact our office. We're archiving them and collecting them and analyzing them, and we have planned to present them in an open public forum at the next Board of Supervisors meeting for an after-event analysis to try to A, air these problems in a public setting, and B, see exactly how deep and pervasive they go, because this was, after all, a new wholesale way of voting in Pima County that had never been done before. It was a very elaborate and intricate election, as you know, many candidates, many issues coming up in the general as well. So this was of a particular importance after coming off the 2020 election. And it's something of such a significant nature that it really needs to be analyzed in an after-action report.
Will it be on the agenda then for the next meeting?
We plan on doing that, yes.
Let's talk a little bit about gun control. Your colleague Rex Scott has put forth, the board actually voted 3-2 to call on the legislature to repeal a law that bars local governments from adopting rules restricting gun use and directing the Pima County Attorney's Office to assess a potential legal challenge. Now, Chairwoman Sharon Bronson joined with you, were the two negative votes, and Chairwoman Bronson said, hey, this is a federal issue. We shouldn't be involved in that.
It is a federal issue, and also it can lead to financial penalties to Pima County to try to usurp state and federal law. So that's a very slippery slope to be treading upon to begin with. Secondly, in that regard, this is an issue that had historic overtones to it, dealing with the fairgrounds and the gun sales and gun shows out there. And I, as I noted in the meeting, I've been on the board going on 6 years now, and I think as many times as I have been years on the board, this type of a resolution has come before the board, and each time the various county attorneys that have been in the county attorney's office at that time have all rendered the same decisions, and that is gun shows at Pima County are allowed and protected and can't be done away with, and all the resolutions in the world aren't going to bring that about. Supervisor Scott's resolution had a little bit different twist to it. He started evoking a public health issue, and that the CDC has determined that firearms are a threat to public health. So my concern was, well, if firearms are a threat to public health and therefore should be brought out from ownership or use by the public due to public health concerns, does that mean that if a firearm is involved in hunting or target practice or clay trap shooting or any kind of collection, those are firearms. They're involved. They're public health threats. They should be taken away. Is that correct? And, of course, Supervisor Scott's response to that, oh, Supervisor Christie, we hear the same rhetoric from pro-gun people such as yourself, and there's nothing to worry about. We're not going to be taking anyone's guns. Hunters can hunt. Trap shooters can trap shoot. This isn't any way going to be threatening anybody taking guns. Well, this is a typical approach that the hard left uses when it comes to gun control. The resolution does not state explicitly or implicitly what type of firearm usage is exempt from his resolution. It's very open-ended, which allows the left to utilize whatever means that the resolution states about gun control at any time, at any juncture that they want. Now, he says, I have nothing to worry about as far as taking people's guns away. His resolution doesn't say that at all. So I wish he would take that same passion and that same interest and that same energy that he's expressing about taking people's guns away and go into the neighborhoods in Philadelphia, in Baltimore, in Minneapolis, in Chicago, especially this time of year on a weekend or a holiday weekend, and go into those neighborhoods and those communities and talk to those people who are really suffering from the ravages of gun violence, and use that same articulation to those people, say this is a health problem, and see how far that goes in those communities.
Well, Supervisor Scott was quoted in the paper. He says your comments are unfounded and has no intention to completely, this effort has no intention to completely strip Second Amendment rights.
The resolution doesn't even speak to that.
So the question comes up, do you think this is something that shouldn't even have been come up?
Absolutely not. There's a thing called state law, and there's a thing called constitutional law and federal law, and both of those are very clear about the intention of gun rights and gun ownership. And what Supervisor Scott's trying to do is circumvent that and do an end run by utilizing the adage that this is a public health issue. He's not going to get any further with that than any other kind of gun control has, when because of the constitutionality and the fact that state law supersedes any local law, and Pima County cannot make its own law that usurps state law. So it's going to be one more attempt that will fail to utilize or elicit gun control in Pima County.
The time could have been used better, you think, than bringing even this up?
Oh, absolutely. And of course, there are many items that could have been utilized better without bringing them up at the Board of Supervisors meeting in the past. So this just goes right along with the other resolutions that we've been involved with.
All right, let's take the break here before I switch subjects. The board, the topic of marijuana dispensaries came up at the board meeting yesterday. Steve Christie has some very strong thoughts about that, and we'll talk with Supervisor Christie. The Republican, representing the only Republican on the five-member board of Pima County Supervisors, and he represents District 4. We'll be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Pima County Supervisor Steve Christie is with us, Republican representing the 4th Supervisorial District. Now, marijuana was on the agenda. You had guns and you had marijuana yesterday on the agenda, or Tuesday on the agenda. The board voted 3-2. Again, you were one of the dissenting votes on revising Pima County's zoning regulations for marijuana dispensaries and cultivation locations. Currently, there are no dispensaries, off-site growing, or production facilities in unincorporated Pima County. Would you like to have seen it stay that way?
Yeah, and I believe my constituents would like that as well. The city of Tucson has a number of dispensaries. They seem to be ubiquitous. I wonder what benefit the community is deriving from that. I don't know, and I don't want to be judgmental, because I know they allegedly are some very good benefits from the product. But I do know that people in unincorporated Pima County do not wish to have a marijuana growing farm or dispensary or production site in their neighborhoods, in their school areas, in their playground areas. And listening to the discussion, you know, I tried to keep an open mind on it, because I'm pro business, and if this is another type of business that I'm always interested in. But listening to a lot of the requirements and the money involved, and then the social justice involved for those who can get a license, and it just left a very unsettling feeling in me. And I got to the point, after listening to a lot of discussion, particularly the amount of money involved to obtain a license and a permit for the such enterprises. I thought, you know, this just doesn't seem right. And my constituents, a number of them, agreed with me, with my feeling. And I'm treading very slowly on this, and I'm trying very diligently to keep an open mind and understand it, but it just doesn't seem right. And until it seems right, I'm gonna not be a proponent of such action.
All right, let's talk about transportation. We haven't really gotten into that in our previous sessions over the last couple of months. Where are we now with RTA Next, the Regional Transportation Authority, the Next program, 20-year program, whatever? Where are we?
Well, I haven't heard too much, but I think for the summer it's been on kind of a hiatus, so maybe the summer for PAG and
but
RTA.
But this is going to come.
It's going to come barreling down the pike, pardon the pun, and it's going to have a lot of implications on our future transportation needs. The Citizens Advisory Committee has been expanded to include more residents of the city of Tucson so they can, quote-unquote, have a bigger voice and a more equitable position in the whole process. And that's fine, but I still maintain that the support from the city of Tucson, that it seemed rather tentative to begin with and tenuous and kind of very highlighted as far as the mayor saying something to the effect of, we will have future conversations.
So let me, you're not fully convinced that the city of Tucson is on board with this.
I'm not convinced at all. I think that right now they're analyzing the situation and maybe giving lip service to protecting or being involved with the RTA. But I think as things draw close, since they passed their or re-up their sales tax for road repair, I think they're feeling rather flush and happy with their own independence, quote unquote. Though they may, in my estimation, I think they will be cutting their nose off to spite their face. But I think when it comes down to it, they will probably very likely say, "Well, we're not going to participate in any RTA2. We'll do our own road repair, and we won't have to worry about having to deal with the other jurisdictions," which to me is just an awful travesty of a great model that did such terrific work in our community for the last 20 years.
Well, weren't you one of the architects of this program, the 20-year program we're currently in?
I was on the original Citizens Advisory Committee in 2005 and 2006. Then I went onto the board of the State Transportation Board and chaired that, and that gave me a seat on both PAG and RTA. So I've been intimately and actively involved in the whole RTA process since its inception back in 2005 and then its victory in 2006. So being in the automotive business all of my life, I always had a deep and abiding interest in roads. And
obviously, roads and automobiles go hand in hand, right?
Obviously, and the folks have to realize that the reason the RTA was first generated and created was because the community was fed up of gridlock. And there was no thought of maintenance in the plan because the maintenance was going to be the job and the responsibility of the jurisdiction. So what it was to increase traffic ability to move quicker throughout the community. Practically every major intersection has been improved, widened, expanded. We have beautiful projects all across the county, the city and the county, but particularly the city. If you look at the Valencia Road extension, the Houghton Road improvement, the Tancredi corridor, all of these are RTA functions, and they enhanced the lifestyle and the living ability of Tucson residents as much as unincorporated and other jurisdiction residents. So for the city of Tucson to turn its back on that type of thing, I think it's a grave mistake and an injustice to the entire community.
You know, you said something that perked my ears up about the maintenance of the roads, that the RTA was never intended to have a maintenance component. But was it fully understood that each of the cities that would be then their responsibility for the maintenance.
It was fully stated. Now, whether or not it resonated and stuck is another idea, but it was fully understood and stated that the RTA would do the expansion and improvements and enhancements, but the individual jurisdictions would take care of the maintenance, and that fell by the wayside.
You said months ago on this program, Steve Christie, that we need a plan B. What could that look like?
Well, it could take a number of different iterations. One that would certainly not have to include the city of Tucson, but the city of Tucson borders are just a certain segment of Pima County. You've still got all the other jurisdictions: Oro Valley, Marana, Sahuarita, the Nations, South Tucson, and all of unincorporated areas that can really derive benefits from the RTA. So it would have to be some kind of a model where if the city of Tucson wanted to even participate, they would be able to do so, but they wouldn't have a vote or an influence into how RTA funds would be spent or what kind of projects would be selected.
They'd in effect be out of the picture.
They'd be out of the picture, which I think is what their end goal is going to be anyway.
So looking at Pima County's budget, you've got nearly $67 million for road repairs. Seems like a drop in the bucket. Could you put that in perspective for us?
Well, it's really not a drop in the bucket. It's record amounts of funding being directed for road repair and maintenance in unincorporated areas of Pima County. And I've asked the Pima County Department of Transportation to give us an update of totals of what and how many miles of roads in unincorporated Pima County have been improved. I have to tell you, when I first became supervisor back in 2017, I would say 90 to 95% of all of the constituent contacts I had dealt with road conditions.
I remember you talking about that. You said when the phone rang, I think something to this effect, you told me when the phone rang, you could almost count on it was a complaint about roads.
The phone rang and the fax mail, the email came in. Yep, and we dealt with, as I say, a vast amount of our constituent contacts over road issues. That has dropped significantly to the point where today, because of the improvements that Pima County has done through its PAYGO road repair system, we are virtually getting no complaints. As a matter of fact, our office gets very often compliments and thanks for finally getting our neighborhood road repaired and finally paving our road that we travel on every day. It's so gratifying to hear the compliments and the praise that our constituents are expressing over the fact that our PAYGO road repair system has been very successful, and really it's just getting started.
Will that be just a one-year deal, $67 million, or is that's just for this one
that's
fiscal year?
That's just for one fiscal year. Now, yeah, there are going to be different amounts allocated over the years ahead, and the PAYGO, I believe, is due to be completed somewhere in 2026. So it depending on what is completed and what is projected and what is programmed, there will be significant amounts still yet to come, but they may be in varying degrees depending on the PAYGO program itself, capital projects.
I wonder how all that will play into the RTA next, when people say, well, the roads are looking better in the county, they're looking better in the city. You're going to have to sell it on something about the future, obviously.
It definitely we'll have to have a different approach to the whole thing, because
different narrative.
We're addressing right now what should have been addressed a long time ago, and that's maintenance and repair. But there are always going to be transportation infrastructure needs. We can always vary the needs to expand into bridges and drainage. You know, flooding is a huge component of problems with our transportation system, particularly in my district. When it rains significantly, They close so many roads out in the Vail area and the Corona de Tucson area, that, and very often people are stranded out there. They can't get in and out of their homes because
just
of flooding.
Just from these recent rains.
So yeah. I'm looking to see once the actual repair and maintenance and repaving and bringing up to the proper standards the roads become, then we can hopefully expand that into things such as flood control and all-weather usage of roads. And now most of the major road projects do include all-weather usage. So that, to me, is significant. Plus, there's a lot of issues with folks that live in unincorporated Pima County in the neighborhoods and in some of the communities that are unpaved but maintained periodically by the county, but not on a regular basis, and usually only on an emergency basis. I'd like to see something expanded into those roads, too, for a more permanent resolution to the problems they have there.
All right, Pima County Supervisor Steve Christie, who did not mention he loves being a supervisor.
Well, I was going to say, if I have ever told you, Bill,
yeah,
that I love being supervisor.
All righty, and we'll look forward to seeing you in September. It used to be a song. There is a song, See You in September. All right, Steve Christie, thank you.
See you in September.
Okay.
Bye.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, a Thursday edition. Slated for our Friday Focus interview tomorrow will be Congressman Raul Grijalva. Joining me for that interview, Tim Steller of the Arizona Daily Star. We'll certainly have a lot to talk about. All right, Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. The Green Things location, so beautiful right now, 13 acres. Well, a little bit of rain goes a long way, and the plants are saying, thank you, we needed that. It is a great time, and we put some color in our garden, and the plants love it. The daytime rain, the overnight rain, now 2 days in a row, looking very good. It's Green Things, over 50 years in business here, greenthingsaz.com. When you're there, stop by Zocalo Village. All that great, wonderful merchandise, much of it handcrafted from Mexico. Joining us on the live line from his observatory in Vail, Arizona, Dr. David Levy, the Buckmaster Show contributor on science, the former science editor of Parade Magazine, now head of and founder of Sharing the Sky, a science education organization. Dr. Levy, one of the most successful comet discoverers in history, 23 comets to his credit, including his co-discovery of Shoemaker-Levy 9. David Levy, how are you, sir?
Hello, Bill. This is kind of an unusual situation because we are in Tucson now, but I got your message and here I am.
Oh, I'm glad.
I've just come back from the Adirondack Astronomy Retreat, our annual one. It was a very successful week we had. Out of six possible nights, four of them were either clear or partly clear. I did over 18 hours of comet hunting. And, Bill, I saw two exploding bolides. One of them on the first night was a Delta Aquarid, which exploded, split in two, and the lower part just disappeared beneath the forest trees on the north. The second one was a Kappa Cygnet that was a day or two later. And that one, when it burst, the burst was as bright as the quarter moon. It was almost like lit up the field like daylight.
Wow.
It was absolutely wonderful, Bill.
So you saw this in real time, right?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Webb, stand aside for a second, just with my own eye.
That's amazing. That must have been the highlight of the Adirondack Astronomy Retreat, which you've been doing for years, but you were with COVID. Was this the first time you all got together since 2019?
Yes, exactly. You've got that right, Bill. The first time since 2019, and we had everything was just working fine, and it was a very good group. We had a lot of people from North Jersey who had never been there before, but well, that was really, really successful.
I'm sure everybody had a great time, and what a great teacher to introduce people to the night sky. And you've got a star party that you would like to tell us about coming up next month.
Yes, it's at the end of September at Oracle State Park. It is the David H. Levy Star Party, named after somebody we both know. It's being run out of Explore Scientific, and it's open to anybody, but you need to make a reservation by going online to Explore Scientific. You can get the information there. And so I just wanted to let you know, it's 5 days from the, I think it starts September 23rd or thereabouts, and it goes on through that weekend.
All right.
It'll be a very successful party.
And again, that's through Explorer Scientific. For more information about the Oracle State Park Star Party that David Levy will be hosting. It's time for the Dr. David Levy quote of the month. What do you have for us?
What I have for us is a song. I'm going to sing. It's one of my very favorite songs. It's by Don McLean. And I think I might have done this before, but I'd like to do it now. And this is one of his most beautiful songs, and it's called Vincent. And when no hope was left in sight on that starry, starry night, you took your life as lovers often do. But I could have told you, Vincent, this world was never made for one as beautiful as you.
I remember that song.
I'll bet you do.
Yeah. David, anything else for us before we go?
Well, we have the Perseid meteors, which is technically the second biggest meteor shower of the year, but it'll be on the night of a full moon. So we're only going to get the brightest ones.
All right. David, I'm glad you had a great trip back to upstate New York for the...
A wonderful time.
Huh?
Thank you. We had a wonderful time, and it's good to be back.
Thank you very much. We'll talk to you next month. See you in September.
See you next month.
Okay.
Take care.
Thanks a lot. Dr. David Levy with us on the Live Line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We are going to dig deep into some of the legal settlements that came down over the past 12 months with our legal contributor, Don Luce, with me in studio after we take a quick break.
Appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the DoubleTree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, presented this quarter by our friends over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. New Mexico really kind of had the head start on us with all the rainfall. We're kind of catching up, up at our place anyway, in the foothills, having some good rain recently. But I'll tell you, the Gila National Wilderness looking really good from what I understand. In Silver City in Grant County, it's only about a three-hour drive from Tucson. Some great hiking in that area. I would strongly suggest visiting their website before you make the trip over there, southwestnewmexico.org, for all the great places to stay and all sorts of ideas about things to do, or as they say, things to how to recreate. We're going to have a great conversation right now with our attorney, Don Luce of the Luce Law Group, offices in Tucson and Phoenix. Mr. Luce, we're just so honored to have him on the Buckmaster Show. He's our legal contributor, author of two very popular books, Arizona Laws 101, A Handbook for Non-Lawyers and Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know, both books in their second printing. Don, how are you?
I'm great, Bill. Thank you.
This is in Arizona Attorney, which is a trade group for those in the legal profession here in the Grand Canyon State. Real interesting. They analyzed Arizona verdicts for 2021. Let's kind of take a deep dive into this, Don. 2021 was kind of an anomaly year for just about every profession. So it's interesting to see what it looked like then. This covered 2021.
It did. This is for the calendar year 2021. Okay. Now the interesting thing about last year, from a civil jury trial perspective, mm-hmm. is the courts were basically closed for the first quarter. So the verdicts that we're going to be talking about essentially were rendered after April of 2021 through the end of the year. And totally, it amounts to about $20 million. The largest verdict last year in Arizona was $5 million, but only five in the top 10 were over $1 million. Hmm. All of the other verdicts in the state of Arizona last year were under $1 million. And
that's kind of an anomaly, isn't it?
No, maybe. The fact that we didn't have a verdict last year that was more than $5 million.
Oh, okay.
But I think people tend to think that jury verdicts are larger than they actually are. And we're going to look at the numbers.
Yeah.
But the numbers, I think, are going to surprise some. The 10th largest verdict last year throughout the state of Arizona was only 640,000. So jury verdicts tend to be less than what people believe they are, but the headline numbers, in other words, those rare cases where there's a lot of money awarded, are the numbers I think that people tend to remember, that stick in their minds.
If you asked people, what do you think what are big verdicts in Arizona, I bet they'd say, oh, $20 million, 10, maybe 10 on the low end, but people do tend to think,
I think you're right.
Multi-million.
And last year, throughout the state of Arizona, all of the verdicts combined were only about $20
million. Yeah.
So the largest was five, and the 10th largest was 640, and then all of the other verdicts that were rendered were less than that. So there's as we were just mentioning, I think there's a misperception about how much money juries actually award plaintiffs who win. Now, remember, these are only plaintiffs who win, and the plaintiff is the person who brings the lawsuit. There are a lot of cases in which the plaintiffs lose, mm-hmm. and those are defense verdicts, and of course, those are zero. Mm-hmm. So we're just talking about the cases in which the plaintiff wins, and then we're talking about the amount that is awarded to the plaintiff after having successfully completed either a jury trial or a bench trial. And a bench trial is a trial to the judge, no jury involved. Of the 10 largest verdicts last year, nine of them were jury trials, and one of them was a bench trial. And the interesting thing about the bench trial is that not only there was no jury involved, but it was done via Zoom.
Oh, my.
So they weren't even in the same room. Yeah. That was, I think, the fifth largest verdict that was done via Zoom, which is the way much of our business these days is conducted. But in this case, it was applied to a trial. The plaintiff did win and was awarded over $1 million in damages by the judge.
Let's go right to the top one.
$5 million?
Yeah.
Okay. So this case was brought against a medical doctor mm-hmm. for misdiagnosis. And unfortunately, the patient died.
Okay.
So this is a medical malpractice, wrongful death case against the physician. It was the jury returned a verdict of $5 million. The interesting thing in my mind is that
the jury apportioned the $5 million as follows. 95% to another doctor who was not even a party to the lawsuit, and 5% to the defendant in the lawsuit. What that means is the defendant in the lawsuit is responsible for 5% of the total, or $250,000 of the $5 million, because the doctor against whom 95% of the damages were apportioned was not a party to the litigation. That part of the verdict is not collectible, right? You can't collect against a non-party. So the headline number is a little bit misleading, because the defendant in the lawsuit was only responsible for 5% of the total. And in negligence cases in Arizona, the jury has the ability to apportion the damages. So if you're 10% at fault and I'm 90% at fault, you pay 10% of the total, I pay 90% of the total. In this case, a party who wasn't even in the lawsuit was apportioned 95% of the total.
Oh, my goodness. So does insurance, doctors have insurance for this, right? I mean, pretty typically, right?
Pretty typically.
Yeah.
There's an insurance company in the state of Arizona that insures the vast majority of all physicians.
So do these 10 largest verdicts fall into one, pretty much one category about wrongful death? Is that?
No, they range from retaliatory termination, which was the second largest verdict, to intentional infliction of emotional distress arising out of two minor children being taken from a mother by the Department of Child Protective Services. So, no, there is no common thread, although I will say that of the top 10, four involve motor vehicles. Okay. And interestingly, of the top 10, three involve the state of Arizona directly, and one involves the Arizona Senate.
Whoa.
So let me talk to you about that one.
All right.
The second largest verdict last year was for $2,750,000. The plaintiff in that case, in other words, the person who brought the lawsuit, is a black woman and attorney who worked as a policy advisor at the Arizona Senate. She brought to the Senate's attention that similarly situated men and white employees at the Senate were being compensated more than her. Guess what happened to her? You don't need to, I'll tell you. While she was on family leave, she was terminated.
So she
brought a claim against the Arizona Senate for retaliatory termination, and the jury awarded her $2.75 million in damages, which included $750,000 in mental, physical, and emotional damages, and $2 million in damages on the retaliation claim. So there you go.
So the state is on the hook on that one.
Absolutely. And the state is on the hook on three other cases that made it to the top 10. The third largest involves the city of Buckeye. And the city of Buckeye got tagged last year for $1.8 million relating to essentially a vehicle-related injury. A musician who had been contracted to provide music at a demolition derby at the Buckeye Arena was thrown from a cargo bed of a shuttle vehicle, which the city owned. He had been asked to help, I believe, put out containers. And he was awarded $1.8 million, including $1.5 million in compensatory and a couple of hundred thousand dollars for past medicals. So
wow,
that's
this was at a demolition derby event.
Well, he wasn't injured in the derby itself, but he was there helping.
Yes, set up or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another one that I'd like to talk about briefly, which this is the only bench trial of the 10.
That's the one before the judge.
Yes, sir. This one resulted in a 1.1, let's say 1.2. It's $1,171,000 verdict against Intel. And this one was a bench trial. The plaintiff in this case was exposed to a toxic gas and reportedly suffered chemical inhalation and respiratory injuries. So after a bench trial via Zoom, he was awarded $1.171 million, including $121,000 in medicals, $400,000 in lost wages, $400,000 in general damages, and $250,000 to his wife for her loss of consortium claim. And so what that means, the loss of consortium claim, is if, Bill, you're injured and your spouse is affected because your spouse doesn't have the same level of comfort and support that you would normally provide as a husband, your spouse has a claim herself. And in this case, the judge awarded the spouse $250,000 in loss of consortium damages.
Any others that we could quickly touch on, Don?
Yeah. So the other one that I think is interesting started out as a bench trial. And then the defendant, who didn't like the result, asked for a new trial.
You can do that?
Well, in Yavapai County, under this particular protocol, you can. So what happened in this case was the judge returned a verdict of $833,000.
Mm-hmm.
The defendant appealed. And under the program that the case had been tried pursuant to, the loser, the defendant in this case, was entitled to a new judge for a jury trial. So they had a second trial. And the jury in that case awarded $875,000, which was about $40,000 more than the judge had awarded during the bench trial. So I guess the...
It paid off. Well...
For the plaintiff, plaintiff's not the one who appealed. It was the defendant. It was the loser.
Oh, the loser.
So the loser got tagged $40,000 more in the jury trial than in the bench trial. Sometimes it's better just to leave well enough alone, and this might be a good example of when that applies.
Oh, boy. All right, Don Luce, always a pleasure. We want to talk, let our listeners know you've got two very popular books. Handbook for Non-Lawyers, that book is titled Arizona Laws 101 and Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know. Don Luce of the Luce Law Group, offices in Tucson and Phoenix. Don, great to see you. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. It's great to see you.
See you next month. All right, that's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of attorney Don Luce and Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show, Bill Buckmaster saying, have a great afternoon.